Yeah, I noticed it.
Read 14 verses.
Adonai said to Moshe, "Tell Eleazar, the son of Aharon, the Kohen, to remove the fire pans from the fire and scatter the smoldering coals at a distance, because they have become holy. Also, the fire pans of these men, whose sin cost them their lives, have become holy, because they were offered before Adonai. Therefore, have them hammered into plates to cover the altar. This will be a sign for the people of Israel." Eleazar the Kohen took the brass fire pans which the men who had been burned to death had offered, and they hammered them into a covering for the altar, to remind the people of Israel that an ordinary person, not ascended from Aharon, is not to approach and burn incense before Adonai, if he wants to avoid the fate of Korach and his group, as Adonai had said to him through Moshe. But the very next day, the whole community of the people of Israel complained against Moshe and Aaron, "You have killed Adonai's people." However, as the community was assembling against Moshe and Aaron, they looked in the direction of the tent of meeting and saw the cloud cover it and the glory of Adonai appear. Moshe and Aaron came to the front of the tent of meeting. Adonai said to Moshe, "Get away from this assembly, and I will destroy them at once." But they fell on their faces. Moshe said to Aaron, "Take your fire pan, put fire from the altar in it, lay incense on it, and hurry with it to the assembly to make atonement for them, because anger has gone out from Adonai and the plague has already begun." Aaron took it, and as Moshe had said, and ran into the middle of the assembly. There the plague had already begun among the people, but he added the incense and made atonement for the people. He stood between the dead and the living, and the plague was stopped. Those dying from the plague numbered 14,700, besides those who died in the Korach incident. Aaron returned to Moshe at the entrance to the tent of meeting, and the plague was stopped.
Adonai said to Moshe, "Speak to the people of Israel, and take from them staffs, one for each ancestral tribe, from each leader of the tribe, 12 staffs. Write each man's name on his staff, and write Aaron's name on the staff of Levi, for each tribe's leader is to have one staff. Put them in the tent of meeting in front of the testimony where I meet with you. The staff of the man I am going to choose will sprout buds. In this way, I will put a stop to the complaints of the people of Israel keep making against you." Moshe spoke to the people of Israel, and all their leaders gave him staffs, one for each leader, according to their ancestral tribes, 12 staffs. Aaron's staff was among the staffs. Moshe put the staffs before Adonai in the tent of testimony. The next day, Moshe went into the tent of testimony, and there he saw Aaron's staff for the house of Levi had budded. It had sprouted not only buds, but flowers and ripe almonds as well. Moshe brought out all the staffs from before Adonai to all the people of Israel, and they looked, and each man took back his staff. Adonai said to Moshe, "Return Aaron's staff to its place in front of the testimony. It is to be kept there as a sign to the rebels, so that they will stop grumbling against me, thus not die." Moshe did this. He did as Adonai had ordered him. But the people of Israel said to Moshe, "Oh no, we're dead, lost, we're all lost. Whenever anyone approaches the tabernacle of Adonai, he dies. Will we all perish?"
You can bring me a partner up.
Okay. Do you want to go through 13 or something?
Mm-hmm.
You want to do it? Okay. You can do wherever she leaves off.
Are you coming with me, Ingrid? Okay. Okay. 18. Adonai said to Aharon, "You, your sons, and your father's family line will be responsible for anything that goes wrong in the sanctuary. You and your sons with you will be responsible for anything wrong in your service as Kohanim. But you are to bring your kinsmen, the tribe of Levi, along with yourselves to work together with you and help you, you and your sons with you, when you are there before the tent of meeting. There are to be at your disposal and perform all kinds of tasks related to the tent. Only they will not come near the holy furnishings or the altar, so that neither they nor you will die. They will work together with you in your duties related to the tent of meeting, whatever the service in the tent may be. But an unauthorized person is not to come near you. You will take charge of all the holy things and the altar, so that there will no longer be anger against the people of Israel. I myself have taken your kinsmen, the Levites, from amongst the people of Israel. They have been given as a gift to Adonai for you, so that you can perform the service in the tent of the meeting. You and your sons with you will exercise your prerogatives and duties as Kohanim in regard to anything having to do with the altar and within the curtain. I entrust the service required of Kohanim to you. The unauthorized person who tries to perform it is to be put to death." Adonai said to Aaron, better at that, "I myself have put you in charge of the contributions given to me. Everything consecrated by the people of Israel I have given and set aside for you and your sons. This is a perpetual law. Here is what is to be yours of the especially holy things taken from the fire. Every offering they make, that is, every grain offering, sin offering, and guilt offering of theirs that they turn over to me, will be especially holy for you and your sons. You are to eat it in an especially holy place. Every male may eat it. It will be set apart for you. Also yours is the contribution the people of Israel give in the form of wave offerings. I have given these to you, your sons, and your daughters with you. This is a perpetual law. Everyone in your family who is clean may eat of it. All the best of the olive oil, wine, and grain, and the first portion of what they give to Adonai, I have given to you. The first produce to turn ripe of all that is in their land, which they bring to Adonai, is to be yours. Every clean person in your family may eat it. Everything in Israel which has been consecrated unconditionally is to be yours." Okay.
"Everything that comes first out of the womb of all living things which they offer to Adonai, whether human or animal, will be yours. However, the firstborn of a human being you must redeem, and the firstborn of an unclean beast you are to redeem. The sum to be paid for redeeming anyone a month old or over is to be 5 shekels of silver, 2 ounces. As you value it, using the sanctuary shekel, this is not the same as 20 gerahs. But the firstborn of an ox, sheep, or goat you are not to redeem. They are holy. You are to splash their blood against the altar and make their fat go up in smoke as an offering made by fire, as a fragrant aroma for Adonai. Their meat will be yours, like the breast that is waved and the right thigh. They will be yours. All the contributions of holy things which the people of Israel offer to Adonai, I have given to you, your sons, and your daughters with you. This is a perpetual law, an eternal covenant of salt before Adonai for you and your descendants with you. Adonai said to Aaron, 'You are not to have any inheritance or portion in their land. I am your portion and inheritance among the people of Israel. To the descendants of Levi I have given the entire tenth of the produce collected in Israel. It is their inheritance in payment for the service they render in the tent of meeting. From now on, the people of Israel are not to approach the tent of meeting, so that they will not bear the consequences of their sin and die. Oh, it's so merciful. Only the Levium are to perform the service in the tent of meeting, and they will be responsible for whatever they do wrong. This is to be a permanent regulation through all your generations. They are to have no inheritance among the people of Israel, because I have given to the Levium as their inheritance the tenths of the produce which the people of Israel set aside as a gift for Adonai. This is why I have said to them that they are to have no inheritance among the people of Israel. Adonai said to Moshe, tell the Levium, when you take from the people of Israel the tenth of the produce which I have given you from them as your inheritance, you are to set aside from it a gift for Adonai, one-tenth of a tenth. The gift you set aside will be accounted to you as if it were grain from the threshing floor and grape juice from the wine vat. In this way, you will set aside a gift for Adonai from all your tenths that you receive from the people of Israel. And from these tenths, you are to give to Aaron, the Kohen, the gift set aside for Adonai. From everything given to you, you are to set aside all that is due Adonai, the best part of it, its holy portion. Therefore, you are to tell them, when you set aside from its best part, it will be accounted to the Levium as if it were grain from the threshing floor and grape juice from the wine vat. You may eat it anywhere, you and your households, because it is your payment in return for your service in the tent of meeting. Moreover, because you will have set aside from its best parts, you will not be committing any sin because of it. For you are not to profane the holy things of the people of Israel, or you will die.
Thank you. A lot here, isn't there? Where do you begin? Yeah, in the beginning. You know, this parashat reading really comes into two different types of major categories for me. First of all, there's the category of rebellion in the camp, and God dealing with that. The other part is God now taking it and going, okay, the rebellion I've dealt with, now I'm going to set order. This is the way it's going to be, okay? And I am now going to take control here, and I am going to set up who can approach me and who can't. It's pretty much that simple. Korach, that is one of the Levites. Korach had been set up I probably left it over at my table there. Remember how Pastor Bruce talked about that the Levites encamped around the tent of meetings, okay, and that they were all the way around. Korach, if you look at the little diagram, if you still have that, Korach's place was on the south side of the tent of meetings. That was where Korach was at. Korach means bald. Kind of interesting. You know, and what was kind of funny was that when you think about it, you go, what did Pastor Bruce teach on Friday? The Nazarene vow. And what happened when you broke a vow? I don't know. I like pastors' comments all the time. Just a thought. You know? So, you know, how many of us believe that there are that we are named. That we are named.
Yes.
We have been given, our name has a meaning. And yes. A lot of times, I mean, how many times Pastor Bruce said, you know, Bruce means, what was it, found in a thicket?
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, there, I was in a thicket, you know. And so it's not by mistake that we have the names that we have. But again, Korach was one of the Levite tribes, or the tribes of Levi. You know, this whole story comes about again on what was named congressional leadership. And for us in the church, how many times have we, you know, questioned the leadership of our church?
Oh,
I think we have.
Yeah. No, you guys don't raise your hand. Oh. I'm just raising mine. Oh. I have.
So have I.
You know, I have. And a lot of times after I do that, I sit there and go, who am I to question the authority of my pastor or another pastor or whoever? And that doesn't mean, I think, in the broad sense, that we shouldn't question. You know, I mean, that's how we grow. We learn. But to take a question and to turn it into, I'll call more of an action, and get into rebellion and to cause discontent, turmoil. I mean, let's just call it the Lashon Hara, the evil tongue. Do you want to go there? I don't think we need to. that's what happened. That's exactly what happened here. Korach, you know, I think it was in verse 16. I kind of love this. Is that Korach says in chapter 16, you know, starting in verse 3, they assembled themselves against Moshe and Aaron and said to them, you take too much on for yourselves. Okay, why did he say that? Okay, now he's starting to justify. Okay, I'm going to justify myself. Ah, you guys take too much on for yourself. I can see back here, you know. After all, the entire community is holy. Look at us. We're holy. Okay, you know, and every one of them, and Adonai is among all of us. Who put you in charge, you know? So why do you lift yourselves up above the rest of us? Who gave you the authority? That's what he's saying. So in your notes, you know, the first thing that I had put in there was the struggle for power. Ooh. Korach challenges Moshe's or Moses' authority. Who are you? Who gave you the authority? Now, Korach, I'm sure Korach was building up his group, his following. I mean, if he had 250 people, you know, later on as we read, and that's just men that were there offering up their incense, he must have been having a pretty good little discussion with everyone and talking about, you know, this authority of Moses and why, you know, why we are where we are. Think about the story. What has evolved? Didn't they just go and see Israel? And didn't they just send out 12 spies? And didn't 10 of them come back going, my gosh, there's giants in there, let's stay away? And everybody then said, no, you know, we're not going to go in there. Then they change their mind, they go in there, then they get slaughtered. And now the Lord sends them back out in the wilderness to wander. And now, look it, you sent us here. Who are you? You know, you're not even thinking right, you know. The authority you have and everything else, you've screwed it all up, Moses. And so Korach is out there just speaking away and building up his group. You know, another thing that happens is that Korach also needs to he attacks Moses that he doesn't hear from God. That's part of this authority. You're not hearing from God. You're leading down us down a path, and that path is not a good one. So the second one is that Korach challenges Moses that he doesn't hear from God, or that he's not hearing from God. And the third thing is that Korach eventually challenges Moses' appointment of Aaron as a priest. Remember, as we read through here, again, Korach talked about, that you take too much on for yourselves, and how you are the one that has chosen to be the leader, and how you have placed Aaron in charge of the priesthood. We end up finding that Korach, he ends up finding more support within the camp to carry out his rebellion. It starts with Dathan and Abiram and On. What's interesting enough is that those three tribes, they are ones that are camped right beside Korach. If you look at where the tribes sit, again, remember we talked about Korach being on the south side of the tents of meeting, and now right on the other side of them are these three tribes. Actually, they all come out of the tribe of Reuben. And so Reuben, you will see, is situated right next to Korach. So what lesson does that tell us? I guess the first one comes to mind is that watch out who your neighbor is, huh?
Oh, yes. Yes.
That's the boundaries.
That's for sure.
But I think maybe a deeper spiritual thought of it is watch out what you listen to, what you hear. I mean, didn't our parents used to always tell us, believe none of what you hear and half of what you see or some stuff like that. And I think that is some good wisdom for us, on who you keep company with and what you're watching so that you don't fall into these traps. You can just hear it right now, again, is that Korach, here I am, we're all holy and everything else, and look at Aaron over there, and he's going to the tent and, offering up to the Lord, and we're just as holy, why can't we go into the sanctuary and do that? And look at, you guys are left out in the field, you can't even get close to it, and so all of a sudden the Lashon Hara is running wild. So he ends up with a large, large contingency that wants to challenge Moses. Another interesting thing is that this group, Dathan and Abiram, already had problems. When we look back, there are... turn to Exodus 2:13. In Exodus 2:13, actually we'll start at 11. One day when Moshe was a grown-up man, he went out to visit his kinsmen, and he watched them struggling at forced labor. He saw an Egyptian strike a Hebrew, one of his kinsmen. He looked this way and that, and when he saw no one was around, he killed the Egyptian and hid the body in the sand. The next day, he went out and saw two Hebrew men fighting with each other. To the one in the wrong, he said, "Why are you hitting your companion?" He retorted, "Who appointed you ruler and judge over us? Do you intend to kill me the same way you killed the Egyptian?" Moshe became frightened. Clearly, he thought, the matter had become known. When Pharaoh heard of it, he tried to have Moshe put to death, but Moshe fled from Pharaoh to live in the land of Midian. Some of the history tells us that the two that were fighting were out of this tribe. Dathan and Abiram.
Yeah.
So you already have maybe a quarreling group, to begin with. Also, Also, they also talk about in Numbers 14:4, they said to it, we'll start in 3, why is Adonai bringing us to this land where we will die by the sword? Our wives and our little ones will be taken as booty. Wouldn't it be better for us to return to Egypt? And they said to each other, let us appoint a leader and return to Egypt. Again, this was the tribes of Dathan and Abiram. So they already have Ot, and they're grumbling, and they are really just having a whole problem with this whole thing. They think it's better to go back to Egypt. You know, they are the ones that are complaining about, you know, we didn't go to the land of milk and honey. I'll bet you that they sent out 2 spies out of their tribes, and they were ones that came back that said, we can't go in there. We know the 2 that did come back, and the rest didn't. They were against taking that. So anyway, now you have a history already going on with this, with these 2 tribes, and for some reason, the tribe of On also gets sucked into this thing too. Under section 4, the rally for support, Korach gets support from Dathan, Avram, and Owen. And B, all of them were Reubenites. And again, we know that Dathan and Avram murmured against Moses, and we find that in 16:12. And let's go there for just a second. As let's start at 15. Moshe was very angry, and he said to Adonai, don't accept their grain offering. I haven't taken 1 donkey from them. I've done nothing wrong to them. Moshe said to Korach, you and your group, be there before Adonai tomorrow. You, they, and Aaron. And you each take your fire pan, put incense in it. Every one of you bring before Adonai his fire pan, 250 pans. You 2 and Aaron in each one of his fire pans. In this, going down to verse 20, let's see, in verse, I think I might have jumped over. Yeah, let's go back to 12 again. I went over it. I'm sorry, 16:12. Numbers 16:12. Sorry. In 16:12, Moshe sent to summon Dathan and Avram. So Moses tries to go and to make peace with them. Okay? The sons of Eliab. But they replied, we won't come up. Is it such a mere trifle bringing us up from the land of flowing with milk and honey to kill us in the desert? So there's their murmuring. And now that you arrogate to yourself the role of dictator over us, so now they're starting to jab him. You haven't at all brought us into the land flowing with milk and honey, which probably one of their spies ended up coming back saying, let's not go in there, there's giants from their tribe. And you haven't put us in possession of the fields and the vineyards. Do you think that you can gouge out these men's eyes and blind them? We won't come up. True rebellion. So under 4C, Dathan and Abiram murmured against Moses. 4C. 4B was they were all Reubenites.
Dathan and Abiram were all Reubenites.
I'm sorry.
The letters got switched. So B is C and C is C.
Oh, wild. Okay. Oh, sorry. I probably have an old. Yes.
So Dathan and Abiram were what?
Sir.
They were Reubenites.
I think
they're from the tribe of Reuben.
No.
I think my notes probably got switched from this, what was handed out.
Okay, so I'll
four is four A. Korach gets support from, again, it's Dathan, Avram, and On. And then B, Dathan and Avram murmured against Moses. And C, all were Reubenites. Sorry about that. So, as we see this happening, we know that the challenge is on. Abraham then says, okay, well, obviously you guys don't think I have the authority. You don't think I have the right to appoint Aaron as the priest. You're murmuring against me. You don't think I hear from God. You know what? Let's lay it down the line here. Let's figure it out, okay? So this had to have been probably in the afternoon because there was normally an afternoon worship that went on, an afternoon prayer. And so anyway, that's why he said, let's go ahead and we'll do it in the morning sacrifice. Come on out, bring your pans, bring all the stuff you need, and you know, let's just go in there and offer it up and let's just see who God chooses, okay? So everyone through the night, you know, gets everything together, all their incense, and they end up preparing for the morning event. Well, the next day, of course, it tells us that they all came to the tent of meetings, and with that, they ended up offering up the incense. Abraham, or I should say Aaron's incense, was accepted. God was not pleased with the other forms of incense or worship, most likely going on is what I got out of this. I think that it gets back to some of our basic roots that Pastor keeps trying to teach us, that I think there is a method and a manner in which the Lord wants to be worshipped and approached. And I think bringing it in our own way, in our own manner, and saying, this is how I choose to worship you, God, instead of how do you want me to worship you, Adonai, I think makes a little bit of a difference here.
I think.
So, as we see, the Lord ends up just cleaning house on this whole thing. He sends fire down, and he ends up just basically smiting 250 people all at once. And I think that as we see with this, we recognize that the tent now, or the tent of meetings, is now starting to set up a specific manner again for the Levites and the priesthood and all of that. So the challenge was the incense test. That's 5A. The incense test was set to determine who could serve in the priesthood. And again, out of all this, out of the 250, there was only one left, and that was Aaron. On B, there was also what I call the earthquake test, was determined who had God's authority. When we looked at that, Moses went over to Korach's tent. And at Korach's tent and around Avram's and also Dathan's area, that is where he pulled the congregations back and then spoke the words of who has the authority. If they die a natural death, I was wrong.
Yeah.
You know? But if the earth opens up, then I think the Lord will show who has the authority here in this. And so we know exactly what was happening. You know, it settled the question of authority for Moses. They also swallowed him up to Sheol. Sheol is kind of an interesting word as we look through that. It really, you know, a lot of times we've always been told that that is hell, Hades. In the biblical terms, it actually means the grave or death. When you think about it, when the Lord said, when Messiah, Yeshua, was put to death, he said he would go down into Sheol, okay, or go through Sheol. And you know, a lot of times we say that we think that he went down into the belly of the earth, you know, and fought with the demons down there and the whole pictures that we have. And the more I kind of thought about this is that I actually see a different picture. The different picture I see is him passing just through death. You know, when it comes to the true part of Satan being judged is when he is thrown into the lake of fire. It's at that point. And so right now, when we talk about the grave and we talk about death and passing through that, it may have just a little different thought than us going to hell or Hades as we've always kind of been taught immediately. You know, and so anyway, it's kind of just an interesting perspective on that word that kind of was intriguing to me. On the third test that we had there was the staff test. And that was to determine, that's 5C, the staff test was to determine God's choice for the priests. On the staff test, well, before we get there, I want to back up just a tad. In the earthquake test, one thing that I found that was quite interesting was that when it said that the ground opened up and swallowed all the sons, the daughters, the family, the wives, and everything else of Korach, Dathan, Avram, and I think On was spared on this, and I'm not quite sure on that. But there are some interesting parts in all of this. On, I think, got sucked into this and was trying to find a way out. And one of the things that was mentioned in the study, the Torah Club study that Pastor gave me, was that he ended up finding that there was a that he was coming against the Anointed One, and wasn't quite really sure of his stance. And so there was some possible repentance or some concern of where am I going,
wow,
and a way for him starting to back out. And as we get further on in there, there is no other mention in the Bible of the tribe of On or that portion of Reuben, but it's kind of left in speculation that, and the sages have an argument back and forth about whether he was and his family was fully consumed or not. But one that is mentioned in here that became extremely enlightening to me was the sons of Korach. The sons of Korach lived.
Oh, really?
Shall we go there?
Yes.
Let's turn to Numbers 26:11. Kind of blew me away when I saw this. We start in verse 8, Numbers 26:8. The sons of Palu, Eliab, and the sons of Eliab, Numel, Dathan, and Avram. These are the same Dathan and Avram, men of reputation. In the community, who rebelled against Moshe and Aaron and Korach's group. when they rebelled against Adonai, and the earth opened its mouth and swallowed them up together with Korach. When the group had died, the fire consumed 250 men. They became a warning sign. However, the sons of Korach did not die.
Oh, my goodness.
Huh? 26:11. And then, let's just head on over to 1 Chronicles 9:19. Gary, that's 1161.
Not the only one that
looks like that.
1161.
That's right.
That's probably it. Yes, thank you. Yeah. 1 Chronicles 9:19. Okay, we'll start at 17, the gatekeepers, okay? Remember that word, the gatekeepers, we'll talk about that a little later on. Shalom, Akuv, Tolmon, Achiman, and their kinsmen. Shalom was the chief. Previously, they had guarded the king's gate to the east. They were gatekeepers for the camp of the descendants of Levi. Shalom, the son of Kor, the son of Yasaph, the son of Korach,
oh, there is.
And his kinmanship from the father's clan of Korim were in charge of the work of the service of the keepers of the gate of the tents.
Wow.
Their ancestors had been in charge of the camp of Adonai, keepers of the entryway.
Wow.
Now switch back a couple more pages to 1 Chronicles 6. And we'll read from 7 to 13. This really blew me away. Chapter 6, verse 7. The descendants of Kahath, the son of Aminadab, the son of Korach, the sons of Asir, the son of Elkanah, the son of Eviasaph, and his son Asir, the son of Tekat, and his son of Uriel, his son of Uziah, and the son of Shul. Let's see, the sons, anyway, the son of Elkanah, Amasi, and Akamot. As for Elkanah, the son, I'm going to get down to, where I wanted to get to was 13. The son of Shemuel, thank you, Samuel. Vashin, the firstborn of Aviah. The part that got to me is that Samuel is a descendant of Korach.
Oh, wow.
Think about that. Why did Korach, you know, he rebelled against Moses because he really felt he should have been a priest.
Yes.
He really felt that he was called to the priesthood of that. And he really felt that, you know, I'm just as important as Aaron. I'm just as important as the rest. Why am I doing this service? What's kind of interesting, the way I kind of saw it, is that everybody has their time.
Absolutely.
You know? God had probably a plan for Korach. Probably wasn't to be devoured. It was to bring forth Samuel. Out of his lineage came Samuel. And wasn't Samuel a priest? Wasn't Samuel part of the priesthood?
Yes.
The prophet?
Yep.
Yes.
Yes.
All of that? So, I don't know, I just kind of thought, you know, to see Samuel to come out of Korach's lineage and all of it. I don't know.
Yeah,
OK. Okay? So I just kind of found that that was really interesting. On the staff test, again, number 5C, again, that was to determine God's choice for the priest. When we get into the incense test, verse 6, there was 250 men that attempted to take the priesthood. And 6A. There was 250 men attempted to take the priesthood. And they offered incense at the morning sacrifice. And Moses, after all, he was blamed after they were all killed. I think the incense test comes back to talk about Yeshua and the correlation of Yeshua filling all the requirements for the priesthood, and actually he has become what they called the right man for the job. You know, Aaron did a wonderful job. It was passed down the Levites, the priesthood, and everything else, but now with Yeshua, we now have the right priest offering up the right sacrifice and atonement for us. It's a great picture for us. Again, on the earthquake test, 7A, Dathan and Abiram refused to meet with Moses. And we also just learned that Korach's son was spared. And the descendant of Korach was Samuel. We also learned that Sheol meant, you know, place of the dead, for death and grave. The staff test was really kind of interesting as I read through that. The staff test was not only to determine who really was going to be the priest, and God would choose who that is, but there also has been long-term significance in this, even in our application today and in the future. Moses tells everyone, you guys, you 12 tribes, go pick out your dude. Okay? Go get him. Whoever you think is the big and mightiest one, go grab the staff and bring it in here, and we'll deal with it. Now, staff was resemblance, and the same word is used for tribe as for staff. And I think that there's probably some connection there, talking about the staff as being the leader of the tribe, the one that's passed down. So these staffs probably had some historic value to them as they're passed down from generation to generation to generation, father to father. So anyway, they bring them all. They make sure that Aaron's name is inscribed on his, and every other staff has their name on it so that there's no mistake. Moses, the sages tells us that Moses, being, you know, not only hearing from the Lord, but also wise, took the staffs and he bound them. Okay? So he bound them together and ended up sealing them with a signet. And so then that way there could be no hanky-panky going on, okay? So he binds them. He places them in the room, or the I believe it was somewhere on the tent of meetings, and then he seals the door with the signet there too. Okay, so he's got it covered, and then it lays there through the night, and in the morning they gather together, they break the seals, and they go in, they remove the staffs, they come out with the staffs, they break those seals, and then they find the blossoms, the fruit, and the staff of Aaron being the one that had the sign. Very interesting for us. So in 8a, we have Moses collected 12 staffs, and B, Aaron's staff buds and produces fruit. Yeah. One of the interesting things that the midrashes that go on has to do with the similarity of this whole event and what took place and Yeshua's death. I was kind of surprised. When I started reading, I go, how do they get that out of this? You know? But the Jews obviously love to midrash. They love to talk through things. They get through their history, and they figure the similarities and the possible applications of it. We all know that Moses was kind of a likeness of Yeshua. We've heard that people teach that many times. Well, the way that they kind of midrashed this was is that, you know, they talk about on Thursday for Yeshua's crucifixion that he has the trial, the crucifixion, and the burial. Starts in the afternoon time, right? Okay? And that's when he ends up through the morning hours of going on trial and then being crucified. He dies at 3 p.m. in the afternoon, and then he ends up being buried. What they talk about in the similarity is that day, Korach revolts, comes against Yeshua, comes against Moses, and he starts with all of this. Moses goes down, you know, tries to talk to Dathan and Avram and tries to get some reconciliation going. Bottom line is that it doesn't happen and the revolt is on the first day. Day two, you know, and this is after the our Lord is in the grave. Then day two, the Bible talks about how the earth opens up and fire comes down from heaven. Okay? And that is symbolic to the time that the Lord is in the grave dealing with death. Okay? Day three, it talks about, again, the plagues and the staff is collected, and that now there is the authority or the priesthood now starting to be brought together. And then Sunday, when it is opened up, not only does the Lord resurrect, but also the staff has blossomed, and now that there's a priesthood that is established, and we now know the order that the Lord has for us. Kind of an interesting similarity, huh? When we get to the priesthood, there is so much in here, I don't even know where to begin with the priesthood and the Levites. I really don't. All I can say is that in looking at it, when we talk about the first fruits, the Levites got the best. The lamb that was without blemish. They got the first grain. They got the best grapes. They got everything that was the best. Out of that, they were required to also give a tenth of what they got to the Lord as the offering, to be offered up. And so there's a whole part here when it even talks and goes through in chapter 18 when he starts setting up the whole priesthood and who's to serve and what they're supposed to do, that it really started to get kind of too much for me. Probably takes Pastor to explain more of that, of why they were given all of this and how the salt plays into this. And, oh yes, I know it would get extremely deep. And it would really take someone far more knowledgeable than me to put it together. But we do know the priesthood in 9 is that the priests were all landless. Landless. The Lord said, I will be your provision.
Oh my goodness.
You will not have an inheritance of the land.
Yep.
And you will end up, I will end up taking care of you. The interesting part is when they talked about the first lamb or the first foal that they were supposed to get money. Did you remember hearing that in there when they talked about you will receive a couple shekels for, I think it was verse 16. The sum to be paid to you for redeeming any month old or over is to be 5 shekels of silver.
Yeah.
So they received money too, along with the sacrifice, which was kind of interesting. And how that all comes together, I'm not real understanding of that. But in 9b, we know that they had no means for procuring an income, but they received one. And see, as we know, their livelihood came from sacrifices and offerings. The Levites, again, were part of this. And an interesting part that I learned out of this was that I've been learning more as pastor's been teaching us about the Levites. And my thought always was, you know, they were the ones running around bringing sacrifices or taking care of the temple area, not being able to go into the Holy of Holies, but just the outer courtyards, and they were able to do their services on that. What I found in some of the study was that was part of their duties, but their duties were expanded much greater than that. And when I started seeing this, I realized that their duties became more of guards and gatekeepers. Remember how we read that in here?
Yeah.
Guards and gatekeepers. And that was part of this, was to say that, first of all, the Lord did not want His holy area defiled. What had happened was that the 250 men, I will bet you, when they went up into the tent of meetings, were not right with the Lord. And so, out of this disobedience, out of this whole situation, the Lord starts protecting and setting forth and saying, you're not going to come in just any old way. You're going to come in this manner, and this is the group that is allowed to go in there, and they're going to be responsible for guarding the gates. We're going to set the order. And with that, on top of that, so they're not only gatekeepers from keeping people going in there and or stealing or doing whatever they're going to do, the unholiness, getting into the holy area, but also they become a buffer for the children of getting too close and having God's wrath come out and consume them.
Yes. That's great.
We also know that the Levites, and this is 10a, perform services at guards or gatekeepers. B was they were to protect the temple from being defiled or the people from death. And C, if you remember, they were responsible for transporting and assembling of the temple. A lot of work. Yes, transporting and assembling. The last B was protected, and C was responsible for transporting and assembly. In wrapping this all up, Hebrews tells us that, let's go to Hebrews 9:4 real quickly. actually, starting in verse 3, Hebrews 9, 3, behind the second paraclete was a tent called the holiest place, which had the golden altar. That's page 1501 for those that have the Jewish Bible. Which had a golden altar for burning incense and the Ark of the Covenant, entirely covered with gold. In the ark were the jar, a gold jar containing manna, or man, this is man here, manna though, Aaron's rod that sprouted, okay, remember that, and the stone tablets of the covenant. I always wondered why those items, staff, I mean, tablets, I can get tablets. That's pretty easy. Manna? Okay, I guess I can go, I guess a miracle, you know? We'll keep something in there that was a pretty much a miracle. For how many years was manna given every morning to the children, you know? So but the part was this that was brought together was this. The ark symbolizes the three offices of Messiah. You're going, okay, how do we get that again? The prophet, the priest, and the king. It talks about Yeshua came as a prophet, primarily as a prophet. And then after his resurrection, he functioned primarily as our high priest. The manna symbolizes his prophetic ministry. As the Torah says, he fed us manna, and that man does not live by bread alone, but man lives by everything that proceeds out of the mouth of the Lord. The rod, Aaron's rod, staff, that budded symbolizes his resurrection and his priestly ministry. And that he's seated at the right seat or the right hand of the Father. The tablets of the covenant symbolizes his role as king, ruler. A king is a lawgiver. Messiah's kingship, says, will be mostly fulfilled or most fully realized in his second coming when all the nations will seek him. And the Torah will go forth from Zion. Kind of interesting. Who says that the law or the Torah is gone away with? We don't have to follow it. It's amazing to me. The more I get to read the Torah, and the more I'm taught, the more I have missed the true meat of what the Lord had for us. We feel sorry for those that, Dee Dee and I talk about it, that are still living off of the 70s revival, you know. And you know, it was a good time. And we all prospered out of it, and or I shouldn't say prosper, but we learned, and that's okay. But I'll tell you, you know, what I'm learning today is miles ahead of what I learned way back then. That was milk.
I'm,
this is now meat, absolutely. The Lord has taken our pastor and got him to get us to a place of giving us solid food.
We're growing up.
Absolutely. So with that, I'm going to stop there, but I hope that the study had revealed something to you today. And I appreciate you guys coming out and bearing with me. And then our pastor will be back very soon to pick up and be good. Better than you.